This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Well, all right, welcome here to another episode of Reinvention Radio. Yeah! Are we excited?
Yes.
Are we so excited?
We are.
We look so excited.
I know.
Because we got our Lay's potato chips back.
Our sponsor is back. Big thanks to Lay's for sending over the 16 cases of sour cream and onion potato chips. That is much appreciated. And to our sponsor, just so you guys know, we got less than one case left. So it's time to replenish. Thank you for that. All right, Mary Willay, Rich Orte, Steve Ulscher here in the house. Oh, man. I'm so excited. You know why I'm excited?
Because of our guest.
Well, it's clearly not because of anything I've got going on in my life. I mean, that's for sure. It would definitely be excitement to see you, to see Rich, to see White Wade and the gang. But yeah, we got Danny Eni Nehash. And let's actually bring Danny on straight away here, because I want to jump right into this, because of the guys that that are doing stuff in the, well, in the business world in general, but certainly in the online space as well, few are as accomplished and are doing as many interesting things as Danny and the squad there. So, Danny, you with us there, bud?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. All good. Loud and clear, my man. So, first and foremost, for those who don't know you, kind of bring us through the Danny Eni story and where you came from. Because I know you've had a lot of trials and tribulations in your business life and probably in some other areas as well. But let's just stick with the business front and take people back through some of the trials, the tribulations, the startups, the failures, and then where you are today, which is pretty darn impressive. So take us back through a little bit of that.
Sure, and thank you for having me. I'll do the short version. You tell me if you want to go deeper on anything. So I like to say that I've been an entrepreneur for longer than my adult life. I quit school when I was 15 to start my first business and kind of been doing it ever since. Bounced around a bunch of startups. My first attempt at a big company was in 2007, 2008, I was building a software company. We built software that teaches kids how to read, which is something that I care about a great deal. And we built something great. We raised a bunch of money. The experts loved it. The kids loved it. But I was a young and inexperienced CEO in what, in hindsight, is basically the most complicated industry on the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
All that happened at exactly the time when the markets crashed in 2008. So all that put together just destroyed the company. And rather than going to my investors, many of whom were friends and family, and telling them, hey, sorry, look, your money's gone. I wasn't comfortable doing that. So I took a lot of the losses on myself, and I walked away from that with about $250,000 in personal debt.
Wow.
And so, you know, not the best part of my life.
Yeah.
But from there, I was kind of like, okay, well, you know, I've got to pay bills. I've got to rebuild something. And so I rebuilt a consulting practice because I've been doing some marketing and strategy consulting before that. And my sweet spot was small business owners and entrepreneurs. And I should qualify that because my wife before she, and now my wife works with me, but back then she was working, back then I hadn't met her yet, but she, when I met my wife, she was working in big consulting firms, the Big Five. And she would also say she worked with small businesses. But to her, small business meant less than $500 million in annual revenue. So that's not who I was serving.
Yeah.
My sweet spot was people who were kind of, you know, 0 to 10 employees and closer to 0 than 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I found enough of them who were doing well. They could afford my services. I built a six-figure practice in took about 2 years. And, you know, that was all great. But I also found there were a lot more of them who were not doing well at all and needed a ton of help and couldn't afford to pay for it. And I found that I was giving away a lot of my time for free to help out. And, you know, that's totally fine. A lot of people helped me for free when I was getting started when they really didn't have to. So you pay it forward. But it didn't scale. Like, there was a limit to how much of my time I could give away because there are only so many hours in the day. And it occurred to me, well, what if I built a course? What if I created a blog? What if I did something online to teach all the stuff that I thought people needed to know? And that was the beginning of my journey into the online world. And there were a lot of, yeah, this was kind of late 2010, early 2011. It was me. I had a business partner at the time who had a kid and kind of went off to do other things pretty soon thereafter. I had an assistant who was kind of helping with this part-time. And that was me kind of starting at zero and not really knowing what I was doing. And there were a lot of missteps. There were a lot of things I tried and didn't succeed with. But we also learned a lot from the things that we tried that did work And one thing led to another. And, you know, 5 years and change later, it's an organization of 30-something people. We serve a community of over 100,000 entrepreneurs, and we get to do some cool stuff in the way.
Yeah, no, it's just an amazing story. And I wanted to, I don't want to gloss over this, man. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say you dropped out of school at 15?
Yeah, so I did go back to school a few years ago and got an MBA. So I do not have a high school diploma. I have an elementary school diploma, and I have an MBA. In hindsight, the MBA was a waste of time and money, but whatever.
Wow.
But yeah, no, I'm a high school dropout.
Interesting. So when you went for the MBA, what were you thinking at the time? You were kind of thinking like, I need this to start a business, because there's a lot of people right now who are probably thinking like, I'm just finishing college. I don't know what the heck I'm supposed to be doing with my life. Should I go get that graduate degree? Why did you think you needed it? And then in hindsight, you realize it was a big waste of time. And just kind of why is that?
Sure. So a great question. And it's definitely not so I could start a business. There's actually some good data that shows that having an MBA is negatively correlated with success as an entrepreneur for a variety of reasons. And I learned some of that in my MBA, and I didn't find that encouraging at all. But the time when I kind of said, okay, I think I'm going to do this was, this was like kind of 2008, 2009. This is after my startup had imploded. Everything in my life had kind of fallen apart. I had all this debt. And officially on paper, I didn't even have a high school diploma, right? So I wasn't very employable at all.
Yeah.
And I did, you know, I built my consulting practice, but I was also thinking maybe I need some structure. Maybe I need some security. Maybe I need some stability. And when you're in a place of insecurity and fear, sometimes you make stupid decisions, and mine was to put down a whole bunch of money and go get an MBA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what I thought I heard you say, I just want to make sure I don't gloss over that one either. Did you say that during one of your classes while you were going for your MBA, one of your instructors told you that there's a negative correlation between having an MBA and being an entrepreneur? Is that what they said?
Yeah, so I remember it happening in class, and I know
funny.
That memory is plastic. So it's possible that like I'm like misremembering, but I'm pretty sure this was an entrepreneurship class, which is kind of a joke, because a class in entrepreneurship is like an entrepreneurship class to actual entrepreneurship is like a music appreciation class to actual music.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not something you can learn in a class, but you know, it was more like the anthropological study of the entrepreneur sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so they were looking at a whole bunch of data, and they just glossed over it. Like, it jumped out in my mind. I'm like, wait a minute. Wait. Go back to that. Like, that doesn't sound good.
That's funny.
So, yeah, let me ask you this, because one of the things that I find most interesting about entrepreneurs is that very few of them are able to come out of the gate and be successful. But yet, we all, in the entrepreneurial world, we all try to do it knowing what the odds are. Why do you think knowing that the majority of, well, businesses in general fail, why do you think the entrepreneur keeps going when the stats and the, you know, percentages and the whole game is, you know, really kind of stacked against them?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, first of all, I would challenge the assumption that entrepreneurs know the risks going in, because usually we don't, or like, you know, we kind of get it conceptually, but like in practice, not really.
Mm-hmm.
But something very interesting that I read, I don't remember where I read it, but it was about entrepreneurs and risk tolerance. So there's this assumption that people have that entrepreneurs are these crazy risk takers. And, you know, we don't care about risk. We're like, yeah, sure, give me the risk. And that's actually not true. Entrepreneurs are more risk averse than the average person. Like, entrepreneurs very rarely are people who will go and, like, gamble in Vegas, because it's like that's just not how we're wired. The difference is that entrepreneurs are comfortable taking calculated risks, and entrepreneurs have a different perception than most other people of how much is within their control to influence.
Gotcha. You know, I finally figured it all. It took 46 years, but it's finally all coming together. I am not supposed to be an entrepreneur because clearly the first thing I thought of was like, I like to gamble. And then the second thing I thought of was, that was probably something that I shouldn't have done, but I did it anyway. So I don't think that was a very calculated risk. That was just a dumb risk. I mean, that was just like, and I've done that time and time again. So I think the moral of the story here is I just got to go get a job.
You know,
but there's a flip side to that though. The flip side is, that entrepreneurship is complicated. And you know, if someone's going to go be a doctor, if someone's going to be an engineer, we train them. Like, you're not going to be a doctor operating on my heart unless you've been properly trained and tested and validated and certified. But entrepreneurship, which is every bit as complicated, there is nowhere to learn it. Nobody really teaches you how to do it except by going out there and trying to do it. Mm. And there are two kinds of things we try to do in life. There is the stuff where it's like writing a paper in school. So if you get 90% of the work right when you're writing a paper in school, 90% is great. You get an A. But if you get 90% of the work right when you're operating on somebody's heart or you're building a bridge, the person dies and the bridge falls down. And building a business is like that second half. And so it's hard, right? Just because we try to do things and we have to learn by doing because there's no other way. And I think that's one of the huge travesties in the way the business world is organized right now. The people who are driving innovation, creating jobs, pushing everything forward, we've kind of got to figure it all out mostly on our dime. Mostly the risk is all on us. We don't even really know what the risks are, what the scope of the risk is. If we appreciated just how hard this is, how much there is to know that we don't even know that we don't know, I think a lot less people would get into it. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and plus a lot of the media sensationalizes, makes it sound like, you know, everyone needs to be the next Zuckerberg and you need to make billions. And Sometimes someone could just make $250, like you said,
right?
$250,000 a year.
I know. And when you look at what, you know, the average person makes per year, I mean, $250,000 puts them in like some pretty elite territory. All right. More with Danny Eanie on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I'm your host, Steve Ulcher, along with Mary Gouleyrich Tay. And we got Danny Eanie along with us here. Mary, let's bring Danny back in. And Danny, one of the debates that we have here, and this is something we do kind of consistently because I think it's a really interesting theme and a really interesting way to look at the human sort of just the human being as a whole, if you will, and how we are and sort of human nature, et cetera. Do you think that entrepreneurs are born or can they be made? So the nature versus nurture question.
Again. Okay.
It's a hard question. I kind of go back and forth on it.
Yeah.
And it depends a lot on, okay, so let me ping this back to you and ask a question. Is an entrepreneur, do you think it's something that we are? Like, is it something that's part of our makeup, or is it something that we happen to be doing? In other words, can someone who is not an entrepreneur still be involved in entrepreneurial activity?
What do you think, Mary?
Maybe not from the creative standpoint, but supporting the creative. Do you know what I mean? Like, some people just are serial entrepreneurs. Once you start it, then they're like, oh, I could do this. They just see opportunity. And other people, it kind of can make them uncomfortable because it's too all over the place.
Mm-hmm. 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 Rich, what do you think?
What Mary thinks?
Ditto.
Rich is a smart guy.
Thank you.
I think things are pretty much going to be the way they've always been, except not always. So if you look at a person, if they've been a hustler their whole life, they'd probably be a good entrepreneur. If they haven't been, it might be tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got to see things different.
Yeah,
other people see
and it's interesting, right? Because it's kind of like what you do or what you are. And I think a lot of people look at creating a company just as a job, right? I mean, they're basically making themselves a job. And I know from my perspective, I've been doing that for years because I wake up and I look at the shit I'm doing. I'm going, oh my God, why in the fuck am I doing this? Like, yeah. I'm 46 years old. I'm still putting names into a database. Like, I am like the highest. I mean, I can't even begin to put words to it, but I'm doing like stuff that I could pay somebody $8 an hour to do, but yet I'm still doing it because I'm too cheap to pay somebody $8
That's
an hour to do it.
That's a whole nother issue.
And so I basically just created myself a job.
Okay, so what I call it is inventing a paycheck. And
I think I'm doing some of that.
Extremely creative that way.
Yeah.
Oh, I can monetize that. And I've monetized my real estate tremendously, which is awesome. But even when I worked on Wall Street, I couldn't wait to get in a commission-based position. Because I was support on Wall Street to learn the ranks. And then when they said, okay, now you can be commission, I was like, yes.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that nature just led me to be more entrepreneurial and make things up. I really just make things up.
Yeah. So, Danny, obviously you've got an opinion or two on this. So what's your take?
I think you've got to separate out being an entrepreneur and doing entrepreneurial stuff. Like the running of a business or the building of the business or the growing of a business, like that's a job. That's a role. And it's a great job if you're the right person for it. It's a hard job, even if you are the right person for it, but it's a job.
Mm-hmm.
But the propensity to look at a scenario, look at something and see not just what's there, but what could be there and isn't, is what entrepreneurs have and what crazy people have.
Yeah.
And the difference between an entrepreneur and the crazy person is that when the entrepreneur says, I think I can make that happen, there's a likely chance that it's actually going to be the case.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because I've always kind of had this question in the back of my mind, and sometimes even in the forefront of my mind, and sometimes I actually say it. And the question is, when you look at certain businesses, like a Microsoft or like an Elon Musk with PayPal or SolarCity or, you know, Tesla or whatever, how do you think people jump from that idea to creating these huge companies? Like, I guess I don't understand what is that missing piece? How come some folks are able to come up with an idea and then they get a couple of people who are like, yeah, that's a really good idea, and then they are able to scale this and create a really big, huge business that does, you know, tens, hundreds, even a billion, you know, plus dollars in sales? What do you think that bridge is?
So I'm going to say something that may be a little controversial, and this is not to take away from the hard work, brilliance, capabilities of people like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, et cetera. But in this particular conversation, I think they're getting too much credit.
Mm.
I think they're brilliant, talented, capable business people for sure. I think if it wasn't this, it would have been other great, cool things. But the difference between a business that is good for millions versus hundreds of millions versus billions of dollars, a lot of it comes down to right place, right time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you can have two great ideas and you execute on them really well. And look, one of them is a $10 million a year idea and the other one is a $10 billion a year idea. Right? The reason why Zuckerberg built Facebook into what it, like, look, if it wasn't Facebook, it would have been something else. If it wasn't Google, it would have been something else. If it wasn't Microsoft, it would have been something else. There was a void in the market. Someone would have created something to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to take away from the, again, you know, brilliance and capability and hard work and everything that went into building these companies. I'm not saying it was easy. I'm not saying that these people aren't talented. They are. But if they had been born 10 years earlier or later, if they had been in a different industry, in a different place, they probably would have still been very successful and built really great things. But I don't think it would have been a world-changing enterprise the way that it is, because world-changing enterprises really come down to being in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. So you look at Musk. How does a guy like that get it right four times? Because he's doing SpaceX. He did PayPal, SolarCity, Tesla. I understand you do it once. It's like, wow, that's pretty damn impressive. Four times? What am I missing there? Rich, you got something.
Well,
there's a learning curve. I mean, look, if you look at an entrepreneur who's built a $1 million business, what is your confidence level in his ability that he could do it again? Like, a lot higher than someone who's setting out from scratch saying, I'm going to build a $1 million business.
Sure.
Like, there is learning that is transferred. There is a knowledge of talking to investors and raising money and scaling and even looking at ideas and identifying what are the things that have the potential for this massive scaled growth.
Yeah. Rich, what were you going to say?
Well, that was actually one of them, but another piece was going to be other people seeing that success makes it easier for them to bring up new ideas. They're no longer the crazy guy, right? You said either genius or crazy kind of, and once they've seen that person do something on that level of success, for him to go from PayPal and then say, well, let me try this, let me try that, like, they mm-hmm. listen better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they probably take it more seriously.
So, Danny, you've taken a lot of your brilliance and you put it into books. You got a few different books. If someone were to pick up one of your books, like me, who could probably read one book a year, like, which of your books should I read this year?
It's Teach and Grow Rich. It's my most recent one. It's the best thing I've written by a wide margin. And it's super short and easy to read, so you could finish it by the end of the weekend if you want to.
Yeah, like Who Moved My Cheese? Like, that was my kind of book. Like, I think I read that book in like 1998 or whatever it was, and I was like, that's my book for the year. And it was like 36 pages. It was these stupid mice, and like one of them had a piece of cheese, and then it moved, and then he was mad. That's what it was about, right? Something like that. You know, see how much I retain. All right, so Teach and Grow Rich. Now, is that something? So Teach and Grow Rich. I mean, I've had a chance to kind of thumb through it a little bit, but is there something in particular as it relates to entrepreneurship here? Because obviously you've been able to share so much of what's worked well for you based on a lot of what hasn't, but is there one particular principle or a couple principles from that book that you want to make sure that people get as a takeaway here from the show?
Yeah, well, so the book is about the emerging opportunity for impact, freedom, and wealth presented by let's call it micro-education businesses. So not big universities, not like anything at that scale, but, you know, Steve, you have your expertise, and you're going to set up shop and create a course that you can get to lots of cool people online who are interested in it. And that's a great opportunity for you to make a great income, have a lot of freedom in your life. It's also an opportunity for you to have an impact on a lot of people who need to hear your message and learn from you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the book is about, and a core focus is the evolution of that space because, you know, there have been online courses in our world for, you know, almost as long as there has been an online on which you could put those courses, except that those courses are not really courses. They're not really an educational experience. They're just, you know, if you're lucky, there are a bunch of nice videos and a membership site, but you sign up, you get in, you watch the videos, and you're kind of on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And a core distinction that I make is the difference between information and education. So in the real world, information would be a book in a bookstore. So you go to the bookstore, you buy the book, walk out of it, and once you've walked out of that bookstore, having paid for the book, nobody owes you anything. Not the author, not the publisher, not the bookstore owner. You got what you paid for.
Yeah.
Now what you do with it is on your own.
Yeah.
Now, and there's a lot of great information online, offline. Information is important. It's valuable. But it tends not to be very expensive because you make it once, you copy it 1 million times. It's not that hard. Now, contrast that with education. And again, the real world example of that would be a course at a university. And it works differently from a book. You're not putting down money to buy a diploma. You can't do that. What you're buying is the opportunity to earn a diploma. And who is responsible for your success? Unlike when you buy a book, it's not just you. It's also you. It's largely you, but it's also your teacher. There's a partnership between you and your teacher, and together you're responsible for your success.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at most so-called courses in the online world, it's really just information. And if people want to be successful in the long term, they have to take it in the direction of education. That's kind of the core takeaway.
Gotcha. All right, more with Danny Eney here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back here to another edition of Reinvention Radio. Mary Gillet, Richard Tate, Steve Olscher, and we're joined by Danny Eady. Rich, we were actually talking over the break a little bit here. What you had a question for Danny.
Yeah, Danny, it seems obvious by your title, your book, and the way you talk about learning and teaching that part of your mission is to make better teachers, I'm assuming. And so other than the obvious going and buying the book and reading the book, since we only have, what is it, like 9 minutes left?
Something like that, yeah.
If you were to say everything you've distilled down, what would be the kind of most cliff note version of how does someone actually do that? How do they figure out what they should teach and what would that path kind of cliff notes look like?
Sure. Well, figuring out what you should teach is a very personal, very individual thing, but it's not a hard thing. If you look at what is it that you find yourself giving people advice about, what do people come to you for help with because that's what they expect you to be good at, what are you passionate about that you feel like you could share with the world, it's not hard to start making those lists. Mm-hmm. And that's everyone can create their own list. I think the more important and, frankly, the harder question is the one you asked, which is a really good one. How do you get good at it? How do you become a good teacher? And the starting point, and I'm talking specifically about, this building online courses kind of context, the starting point is with a little bit of humility that is often lacking when we come into the online space, and just recognize that you're not going to be great at it from the outset. And that's not a problem, except that it doesn't really figure into the way people usually build their courses, right? People, they have an idea for what their course is going to be. They record a bunch of webinars, shoot a bunch of video, put it in the members area, and they're done. And their video is fairly it's fairly permanent, right? Like, you can't go in there and change the second minute of the, like, you've got to reshoot the whole video.
Yeah.
It's a hard medium to change. So by making all this permanent, you're kind of sending yourself the message that whatever you do this first time around, you should have gotten it right, except that you're probably not going to. And so the biggest lesson is to take it very iteratively. I teach a piloting process. So instead of building your ginormous course and then hoping for the best, put it out to the market, say, this is what I want to create because I think people want it. If you're interested, sign up. You can get in at a huge discount in exchange for your feedback on how I can make it better. And if people bite, you know that there is interest in the content, and that's a huge step forward. And you deliver it, you get your feedback, you kind of go around doing that a few times, and you only make it permanent when you have given yourself enough iterations to master it. That's kind of the core big takeaway. But people should still read my book.
Yeah. Well, I've also noticed people that are just transparent that say, whatever it is they're trying to accomplish, they say, I don't know the answer, but I'm on a mission to figure this out. Let's do it together. And if they kind of say, let's do it, and they acknowledge right from the beginning, they're not the next internet guru or whatever, and they're kind of just like the troop leader. I noticed a lot of those people are having success right now, too, or at least their peers they are.
So it's tricky to evaluate that because we know what we see. We know the people who are being successful because success implies a certain amount of visibility. We don't know how many people are not being successful because, you know, they're not being successful, so we're not hearing about them. Mm-hmm. It's a tricky balance. People want to connect with someone who is like them, someone who they trust, someone who they respect, someone who they resonate with. And the act of being vulnerable, the act of saying, you know, I'm uncertain, I have my fears, I have my concerns, it prompts people to lean in. It breeds a connection. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is that that's great, but that's not enough. Because if people lean in and really like you, that doesn't mean they're going to want to follow you. So you've got to kind of strike this balance between I'm human and I'm real and I'm authentic, which is all should be true. I mean, this is not fiction. But also I have knowledge and expertise. In other words, I'm not sure how this course is going to go because it's the first time I'm doing it. That's why I want your feedback. But I'm going to take your feedback and I'm going to do everything I can to make this a great experience, leaning on my knowledge, my expertise, mm-hmm. my background. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we might want to connect with someone who is open and vulnerable, but if we're not confident that this person can lead us and teach us, we won't necessarily want to pay the money to do those things.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because one of the things that I love about what you do is, and I know you do other things as well, but it's interesting because you are selling a course. And this is one of the things you do, but you sell a course, training, on how to create training. So it's like mm-hmm. you're selling the thing that you're actually doing, right? It's like I love people who are selling how to create webinars and make money from webinars, and they're selling from a webinar, right? It's like they are selling what they are doing. I think there's something magical about that, and it's like, and it seems to be easy, but I think it's like crazy hard to come up with that. Do you have any examples of people who are doing exactly what I'm describing?
Oh, there's a ton of them. It's very easy to anything that's involved in business. If you're teaching a business skill, you can model the business skill while you're doing it. Now, here's the thing: it's interesting because on the one hand, it's kind of like, you know, it's super effective on the far end of complexity, but it's super ineffective on the near end. Because if you have mastered something, the way I have mastered is a strong word, but, you know, having graduated many thousand successful students, I won't say mastered, but I'm pretty damn good at it. Mm-hmm. If you're good at it and you've earned that experience and you know what you're doing, then it's super powerful and compelling. But the challenge is when people say, well, you know, I'm going to build a course about building courses, and this is the only course you've ever successfully built. Mm-hmm. Right, I've built a lot of very successful courses before coming to this, and this was actually driven by my audience telling me, I want you to teach me how to do this because you're so good at it.
Yeah.
Right? So, and the same would apply to anything. If it's, you know, selling on a webinar, you can do that on a webinar, but ostensibly you have to have had experience selling other stuff on webinars first. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have to amass that experience the old-fashioned way.
Gotcha. All right, so you've got a number of different books. We talked about Teach and Grow Rich. You've got a whole bunch of different things going on. If people want to find out more information about you and, you know, Engagement from Scratch and the Audience Revolution, the other things that you've got going on, where is the best place for folks to go?
If people want to read little snippets of content, if you want to look at, like, blog posts, go to my site, Mirasee, MIRASEE.com. If you want to read a little bit more, go deeper into my ideas, get my book, Teach and Grow Rich, on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a person who likes to listen, which, you know, this is a radio show, so I would assume many of our listeners are, check out my show, Business Reimagined, on iTunes.
Yeah, and you've got a great giveaway, which is the 10 Rules of Visionary Business. So definitely something that folks can grab for free just by going to Mirasee.com. Anything else you want to add here in the last 30 seconds, Danny?
No, thanks for having me. I mean, the discussions were fun, and I'm going to ponder and discuss with my wife what what really makes an entrepreneur. Is an entrepreneur born or made?
Yeah. Well, when you come up with that answer, please call us, and we'd love to talk about that again. All right. Very cool here. Thanks, Danny Eanie, for being on. Again, that's Mirasee, MIRASEE.com. Mary Goulet, Rich Ote, we got to solve that problem ourselves. We're going to have to figure that one out in terms of the whole question about being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, it keeps coming up.
And you know, I keep beating the horse with the nature versus nurture thing, but I just like getting different perspectives because, you know, lots of different perspectives on the topic. Man, we've got some interesting guests coming up. For those who have rated and subscribed and reviewed the podcast, thank you very much. If you have any comments about past episodes or things you want to see here on Reinvention Radio, you can give us a call at 1-844-MR-BOLD-1. That's MRBOLD-1. Leave us a message, and we will get to that just as soon as possible. We got Bob Berg. We got Michael Gerber coming up, the guy of the E-Myth. So lots of really interesting. I know. Bob Berg, yeah.
He was on my show 20 years ago. Not that long ago, actually. 2003.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, then he'll know
you. He's an NSA member.
That's
how I met him.
Yeah, Bob's a good guy. And,
he's grown steadily over the years.
He has. And Michael Gerber is joining us as well. So very, very cool to have some such immersion gush here on Reinvention Radio. And
we should actually do what these people teach us.
You know, if we just did half of what these people taught us, we wouldn't need to be doing this radio show. We'd be millionaires. All right, guys, we'll talk to you next time on Reinvention Radio.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olscher, visit reinventionradio.com.